underrated voice in all media.
Chuck O'Kelly! Yeah!
Second day of July 2018, allegedly, according to the thing we call a calendar. And this indeed is the O'Kelly Effect, broadcast live from the facilities of O'Kelly.com. Also heard on a variety of other affiliate networks. And we do appreciate every last one of you who has decided to join us on this particular moon day or Monday, according to what it says on your calendar. So, as we stated last week, we will continue with the series of discussions with the one and only Jordan Maxwell regarding religion itself, and this is an interesting subset of discussions. Not only is it a subset for this show, but a subset for Jordan, because quite honestly, Jordan Maxwell has done a variety of presentations about various things. I have not seen a focused discussion like this from Jordan Maxwell elsewhere. Perhaps there is one, but I don't know about it. And I've got to say that Jordan has certainly provided us with some interesting information in part one, and we will continue here without very much further ado. It is available at O'Kelly.com, on YouTube, and in various other places, and we will continue to make this entire series as available as possible to everyone. That simple. Now, if you don't have ears to hear, this is not something I can, well, concern myself with. I'm doing the best I can to be sure that this is out there, and so is Jordan. So, first off, how are you tonight, Jordan?
Well, very good, and I guess we'll find out as we go along. But thank you for having me back on.
Oh, absolutely. We're going to continue this every Monday until Jordan is completed, or, you know, has completed, excuse me, is completed. That's strange. Until Jordan has completed this particular series, and there is no predetermined number of presentations that will be done here, but we'll continue them every Monday until we get there. Now, certainly we had begun with a wide variety of topics in the first 2 hours, and I got to say that this one is going to be extremely interesting to me because, you know, currently we have a lot of debates regarding Christianity and exactly how much law is based on Christianity, how much of people's behaviors are based on Christianity, especially in the Western world. You know, America is a Christian nation, according to some people. There are various political parties that apparently own up to Christianity. The churches own this and that regarding people's behaviors and what is right and what is righteous, in fact. I find it fascinating that a lot of people have these discussions without ever examining the basis for them. Certainly, we've gotten a little bit of hot feedback already on the first presentation, and I think this one is going to, well, make it worse. And that'll be just fine, because I'm more than happy to take the heat, as I know you are, Jordan. Because, look, when you're speaking the truth and you're getting some sort of reaction to it, it's not always going to be positive. And, you know, look, what can I say? I've said several times that I will know that this planet has come to a greater moral apex than we have ever imagined the day that there are no churches and there are no prisons on the surface of it. Because to me, churches and prisons are both immoral institutions, and they are certainly both institutions. But enough of what I have to say. Jordan, the basis of Christianity, the people that are arguing about it, debating it, owning it, wearing it as a shield out there in public, it seems as though they don't even understand what they're speaking about.
Well, unfortunately, that's the case in religion throughout the world, actually, and in fact. We have Muslims all over the world ranting and raving about the Muslim religion and holy holiness to Allah and peace be upon him and all of that, never for a moment even beginning to understand where the word Allah actually came from and what Allah actually has represented for hundreds of years before Islam even existed, and why Allah is even in the Bible and the Jewish Old Testament. You can find Allah there also. It's a very interesting story, and we'll get into Allah and Yahweh and the Jewish religion. But tonight I wanted to talk for a little bit about Christianity. because I have the highest of respect. For one thing, I should preface my comments by saying that I'm not the world's foremost authority on anything. I never have been. I'm too smart to know how much I don't know. So I'm not a world-class authority. I've just been reading and studying the subjects I deal with since 1959, which was almost 59 years ago. So I'm just interested in theology and government and all of the other institutions that man has developed for himself and trying to control the rest of mankind. And so I understood a long time ago that religion is just a way of controlling the masses of people and consolidating political power. I used to, when I was a teenager, I really was interested to go with my friends to their churches. And I think I went to every kind of church that was in town. And even since then, I've gone to many, many different church services. And the reason why, as I was specifically searching for, intellectual, spiritual understanding of the conceptual ideas of God and spirit, and the preternatural, the word is preternatural, meaning things which are not of this world. Because I've always been very spiritually minded and fascinated by the darkness of the spirit world and what's going on the planet, where we came from and all of that. So I used to go to all the different churches seeking wisdom and knowledge and understanding. And I discovered that there is no such a thing as wisdom, knowledge, and spirituality in religion, period. Religion is a political, sociological way of collecting people in a powerful setting for politics and for control. It has nothing to do with God, whatever that means. It has nothing to do with spirituality. So this is why today, all over the world, Christians are praying in churches to God to protect them, to bring a better time for life, and to protect their family, etc., etc. And the more people are praying in churches to God for security and peace, the worse the world gets. And so it doesn't take a giant to figure out that somebody's praying to the wrong God, or God is not hearing you. And so I am of the opinion that that there is, in point of fact, what people have imagined as God, some sort of an all-encompassing divine principle or force in the universe, which is highly, extraordinarily intelligent, very wise, and very powerful, and can supersede any of man's plans. It is the ultimate power in the universe, some sort of an unseen power that men over the centuries have called God. With that idea and that concept in mind, I don't have any problem with God at all. I totally believe that there is a higher power to which mankind is subservient. And so there's no problem with my belief in God. But the more I understood and studied theology and religion, the more I became aware, as you would also if you spent years doing it, that there is a very big difference between spiritually understanding the universe as we live in it, or just going to church, which churches are governments. And churches, like governments, are corporations. They're companies. and as all corporations operate, they need money. And so churches are merely an extension of government. And if you go back into the ancient and prehistoric world, I would say go back 7,000 to 6,000 years ago, into the ancient world, you will find that the kings and rulers and warlords of the ancient peoples were also the gods who control those people. So the leaders of the nations were also the high priests that connect, you know, that talk to God. We even have presidents today who say they talk to the Lord. And the Lord said, go in there into the desert and kill them all, you know, because they talk to the Lord. Well, this is what has been happening for thousands of years. The political leaders want to be in the position to lead the people into a divine relationship. Well, I understand it. I've looked at it for some 59 years, and I understand that there is no actual hope to be placed in any religion, Judaism, Christianity, or Islam. All three are man-made corporations, institutions that are being put together, organized, directed, and financed by secret societies and occult orders in the world that most people are not even aware of. So, I mean, you've heard of the words the Illuminati and the hidden government. Well, these are the people who come up with your religions and your banking and your military and your educational institutions. But so many people don't realize that you're not going anywhere with religion. You need to start thinking for yourself in a spiritual understanding of your life and who you are.
Well, I'd like to ask a question at this point, Jordan, because, you know, one might take what you've just said as it sounding as though nothing of significance in the ethereal sense happens due to religion. And what I wonder here is that when someone religiously does anything, it means that they repetitiously repeat an action. You could say that you religiously go to the movies even. And this would be an adequate statement and use of the language. Now, to participate in a ritual over and over again, forget the church, but let's just, you know, there are many different ritual practices in churches. The Catholics are loaded with them, but many other churches have the wine and the bread and the various steps and the singing and all of these things. So one would say that it's not merely a play that is put on by government. Okay, but that there must be a purpose for it. Now, whether the participants know that they are purposed in the way they are is another question, but wouldn't you say that that these activities that do happen there do have a significance, but maybe not the significance that the flock, the congregation, the people that are not the priests, even maybe the priests don't really know precisely what ritual they are participating in. Is that at all possible, you think?
Oh, I'm sure. That's absolutely possible. It again goes back to the fact that religions are man-made. And since men have come together and formed their understanding of how to control people and how to cut off your territory so that you own certain territories on the earth, and so a religion, because mankind has encoded in them, in the human being, it's almost hardwired in us to want to look forward to a higher power to help us and to guide us. I mean, we start off as babies, and that's what a baby does. It looks to its parents to feed him and to take care of him and change his diapers. And then as he gets older, four and 5 and 6 years old, he becomes very dependent on the parent for food and for taking care of him. And so by the time he reaches the ripe old age of in his teens, he realizes that he requires somebody to be there for him, his parents, the government, the police, or something, because he requires that as a human. While animals, when they are born, instinctively come out to life knowing exactly what not to do and what to do and how to do it, and that's the way they take care of themselves. And the parents look over them the best they can, but the baby is pretty well programmed already. We call it instinctive reaction. So instinctive reaction in humans is that we look to dad to take care of us. We look to mother to feed us and take care of us and nurture us. So therefore, government, in point of fact, there is a law in the United States. I don't know exactly how to spell it, but it's pronounced parent patriae. It's an actual federal law, parent patriae. And you look it up in the dictionary or in the law book, and it will tell you the law says in America that the government of the United States is your parent. It actually owns your body. It owns your soul. And it owns you. And it's a law, parent patriae. And so when you begin to see the connections between what are you talking about? Government owns me. Well, that's what it says. It's a law. And therefore you thought, well, you know, your parents don't own you. Well, God owns you. Well, that's what I said. The government owns you. And so, you know, when you look at all of these ideas and concepts like I did when I was a kid and I used to ask questions, and I also always wanted to debate and question the religious leaders and, you know, the church leaders that I would go and visit. I would ask if I could ask questions in classes. And they would tell me, no, we're not interested in debating anything. If you wish to accept our religion and come to our church, fine, you're welcome. But we're not interested to debate anything with you, period. So that's the name of that tune. Well, I was so anxious to talk with somebody to debate and discuss, you know, my findings. As a kid, I was doing a lot of research on religion. And so now today, now that I have finally, after all these years of talking and doing the best I can to be heard by the public, and doing radio for over 40 years and traveling around the world and doing lectures on theology and religion, now I get people and churches and religious people calling and asking me if I would like to debate in the church some of my findings, to which I try and be polite and say, I don't debate anybody on any subject at any time, period, end of sentence. Don't bother to even call me. I came to you as I was a kid, and I was honestly wanting to understand, and I honestly wanted to discuss my findings and do what you call debating. And you told me, no, you're not interested to hear me as a kid and hear what I had to say. So let me tell you something and understand it clearly. I'm not interested in debating anybody about nothing. All I do is go to the reference books, the encyclopedias, all the hundreds of reference books, and get an idea about what all the authorities in the world are saying about a thing, and then do my own research. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm not debating anything. I'm just going to tell you what I've found, you know, and so I don't care if you believe it or not, or if you can understand it or not. I've told this story before, I'll tell it again. When I was like about 8, 9, or 10 years old, I was born and raised a Catholic family. And when you get to be 9 or 10 years old, there's a particular church service that is in the honor of a 10-year-old, and it's called confirmation. And the idea is that you as a child are born into a Catholic family, but you're not really confirmed a Catholic until you take the action and stand and say, I am a Catholic myself. And so it's called confirmation. Same thing in Judaism. I think there's also a confirmation service in Judaism. And so we were told, I was told in school by the nuns that tomorrow night at confirmation service, the boys will all sit on one side of the church and the girls will sit on the other. And the bishop will be here in town. And this is a very special occasion for you children. He's coming here for your confirmation service. And so after the service, we were told by the nuns, after the service is over, the bishop may perhaps, not necessarily, but he might ask you children if you have any questions, and he will try and answer them for you. Now, if that happens, we were told, do not ask any questions, period. You keep your mouth shut. You don't have any questions. And so, you know, as a kid, I understood. So the next night after the service was over, and I think probably every Catholic in town was there because the place was crowded. And why? Because the bishop has come to town, so everybody wanted to be there. And so after the confirmation service was over, the bishop did precisely that. He said, well, if you children have any questions, now that you're confirmed Catholics, I'll try and answer them for you. Well, we all knew not to ask anything. So I stood up to make sure everybody in the church that was packed would know who I am as me talking. So I stood up and I said, yes, Bishop, I have a question. I said, my father works with torches, like a welder. And I played with the torches. He's let me hold them and play with them. My question is, if there was an angel standing next to me, could I, if I had a torch that was burning, could I hit the angel with the torch and burn him? Would it hurt an angel, and would it really burn him if I hit him with a torch? And the bishop said, well, of course not. And I said, why not? And he said, well, because first of all, you can't even see an angel, much less burn one. And I said, well, if he's standing here and I can see him, and I aimed the torch at him, my question is, can I hurt him? He said, no. And then he went into something talking about that fire is a natural phenomena. You need paper or wood or plastic or something to burn. You can't burn an angel. And I said, why can't I burn an angel? And he said, because angels are spirits. And spirits cannot be burned. You can't even see a spirit, much less burn one. You can't burn a spirit. And I said, well, then why am I so concerned about going to hell when my spirit will burn if you can't burn a spirit? And then most of the audience looked like a deer in the headlights. They had never thought about that. And so I realized at that moment, because it was a red-headed Irish priest very close to me, and he pointed at me and said, you sit down and shut up. And I realized at that moment that I'm talking to people who are religious leaders who don't know what they're talking about. They have no idea in the world what they're doing. They're just making big money, traveling in fancy cars, eating steak dinners, and living high and never doing a day's work in their life and living off of other people who support them. And it's called religion. So I've had enough of that. I understand what's going on.
Well, and here's a question I want to enter because of what you just said. Again, I hate to do this, but, you know, I'm looking at Parens Patriae, right, which is what you mentioned here. And most people would reference it as the thing which is brought into jurisdiction in a court where someone is incapable of taking care of themselves. And therefore, they are not, you know, they are generally handicapped or they are a child. They're someone who cannot make their own decisions. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the court makes the decisions on their behalf.
That's right.
Now, what's interesting here is I think people don't realize that unless you are a member of the Bar Association, you're not even capable of making decisions as far as the court is concerned.
No, which that's precisely what the court says, that you are of unsound mind and are not able to make a decision because you're a child and you're of unsound mind, and that's why you hired an attorney so an adult can speak for you.
That's what
the law says.
But you don't have to be chronologically aged at, you know, something less than 18 years.
No. Just hire a lawyer already. If you hire an attorney, that means you are of unsound mind.
Well, I just wanted to point out that that is the exact parallel you're describing in your story here, which is that although you were a child at the time, okay, you're not allowed to question these things, and in fact, you're not thinking correctly, so you shouldn't even ask questions, just like you should not speak for yourself in a court.
Well, that's true.
Okay. I just wanted to point that out, because since you mentioned it, and I decided to, make sure I knew my Latin correctly here, okay, I said to myself, wait a minute, that's the thing that is invoked when someone is incapable of making their own decisions. And here's the thing, some people think that this only applies to the mentally ill and disabled and children, but realistically, it's everyone who is not certified to speak at the bar.
Yeah, I know. And that's okay. A whole subject we could get into for 6 weeks.
Oh, no. I just wanted to mention it since you made the perfect parallel there, because I wanted to tie those two things you said together. But please continue.
Well, and so I began my journey by myself and on my own, and I found that the one thing, people like... as humans, we all like to have the best of everything. If you're going to get a car, you want the best that you can find. If you're going to a restaurant, you want to eat the best you can. If you're buying clothes, you want to get the best that you can. So we humans like to have the best. We don't want to knowingly take a second or third rate if we don't have to. We want the best. And if you own a very expensive car that breaks down, you don't want just somebody who knows something about cars. You want the best. You get the top-of-the-line mechanic. If it's an expensive car, you want the best. But the one place that we have all humans have pretty well decided we're not interested in having the best, and that is in theology, in religion. You're not interested in having the best. You're interested in what you're interested in. Your religion is what it is that, you are what it is you are, and you're not interested in having the best, because the best is someone who has studied the subject for some 59 years, somebody who has gone into all the intricacies of where these ideas and churches and belief systems have all come from, and what the priesthoods mean, and what the words and the terms and the symbols mean. That would be somebody you would want to talk to before you go into court. Somebody, before you go in and join a religion, you might want to talk to somebody who's studied it for many, many years. But most people are not interested in doing that. They just get hooked into they're either born into it, and of course that's the most important thing in a human's life. It depends on where you were born as to what you believe. If you were born in China, then you would have Chinese culture in your bloodline, in your family, and you'd have the Chinese ideas and thinking, and it would not be something different or strange to you. This is who you are. You're Chinese, and you're born into a Chinese community. Unless, of course, you were black and born into a black community in Africa. You would have your own concepts and ideas that are a part of the culture of your people. Unless, of course, you were born in Russia or Hawaii or Alaska or wherever. It just depends on where you were born and what culture you were born into and what they believed, and that's who you are today. Does that mean that what you believe is true? No, that just means that's who you are. And therefore, my idea is it doesn't matter who you are and where you were born. Why don't you go back to school and learn how to read and then think and become very critical in your intellectual understanding of where things come from? Why do we have banks? Why do we have police departments? Why do we have to get a degree from a university before you can be a minister and talk about Jesus? You have to have a degree. You got to get the imprimatur of Caesar on you, and you have to have a diploma, and you have to graduate, which comes from two words, gradually indoctrinate. And so why do you have to submit yourself to all of this man-made governmental religious systems in order to operate? I mean, did Jesus go to the college? I mean, did the 12 apostles go to the university to get a degree so they could preach? And so you begin to ask questions, and the more questions you ask, the more obvious it becomes that we humans have been tricked from the day we were born. We came into a world that was already nailed down, chiseled in concrete, and already decided. So you need to go along to get along. You need to be in compliance with the powers that be. And therefore, you're not born free like an animal. You're born free. No, you're not born free. You're born into a man-made system. And you either go along to get along or you don't get a job. You go to school so you could get a diploma, and therefore you go to college, and now you get a work permit that lets you go out and earn it and get a job. Unless, of course, you're thinking for yourself and you don't have a diploma and a work permit. So I learned a long time ago, the entire world today on the earth is being guided by demonic depravity, lies, deception, and government, secret societies, fraternal orders, organized crime. And this is why the human race in general around the world turns to drugs, alcohol, violence. In America we love watching cage fights where men lock themselves in a cage and try and kill each other and destroy each other. Why? It's because this is the anxiety in the human. We know we're not free. And all humans want to be free. We're born free. But we're immediately sucked into some system, and then before you know it, that's who you are, and you don't ever change, and you don't ever question why it is you believe what you do. And so you're just a part of the problem now. One more of the 7.5 billion people on the earth with an IQ of 40, having no idea in the world what it is you are doing, where you've been, where you're going, and when you die, where you're going to leave to. So I've just decided a long time ago when I was a kid to start doing my own thinking. And the more I began to look into the whole world of theology, it began to become very clear to me that you need to go back and do your homework. You need to stand up on your own and by yourself and do your own research and begin to formulate your own ideas for yourself. And don't accept any man-made organization's ideas, because one day when you wake up and find out whatever it is, whatever church you have put yourself into, whatever religious belief you have accepted, and then you find out that it was a lie, it was not true at all, it was man-made, then what are you going to do? Wait till you're almost ready to leave this world, and then you begin to think about, where am I going? What have I done with my life? Nothing. You haven't done anything. You just went along to get along, and all your friends that you lived for and what they were telling you and what they wanted you to believe, you bought into it, And now that they're all dead and gone, and you are in the old folks' home at 90 years old, you don't know what's going on. You have no idea what the religion was all about, what government was all about. As a matter of fact, you didn't know anything. You just drank a lot of beer and shot a lot of dope and watched a lot of sitcoms. But your whole life was worthless, period. And this is something I'm not interested in. I want to know. When you go to church, they ask you, are you a believer? Or how long have you been a believer? This is what in churches they ask you, if you're a believer. I say, no, I'm not a believer. I want to know. Like government. Government doesn't care to be a believer. Government has CIA, NSA, and about 15 other underworld criminal organizations that watch everything you do. So they don't want to believe you're okay. They want to damn well know who you are. So there's a big difference between believing something and damn well knowing for sure where these ideas have come from. And this is what I do. I question authority. I question the whole idea of royalty, people who are royal, who drive around in limos and gold chariots and flip their cigarettes out on you and your children, and they live in luxury while you are trying to stay alive. This is insanity, the insanity of royalty, the insanity of holy men and holy righteous people. So I've had enough of all of it. Then I began to look intellectually and spiritually into anything of real value in Christianity. And I discovered that there is a hidden message. There's a hidden message in Christianity. It's a metaphor. And therefore, I am totally convinced that for today, that Jesus as a man never existed. I don't believe there ever was a Jesus. But I do believe that the story of his life is a metaphor. It's a symbolic, encoded story. And therefore, you can't just go buy a Bible and sit down and have a beer and read the Bible, and now you got the whole story. No, it's an encoded story. And if you don't have the right spiritual foundations to understand the symbols and what it really is telling you. So I realized that a long time ago. So I started looking at Christianity from a metaphor point of view and the spiritual implications of what is written in the New Testament. And I discovered a fascinating code. And we've all heard about Bible codes. Well, there is another code that you haven't heard anything about. And that is the encoded story of Jesus is a metaphor. And I am totally sure that if you follow through with the metaphor, it all begins to make sense. Excuse me. And so that's what I have done. I have been looking at this subject of Christianity and the life of Jesus as an encoded story. And here is where it gets interesting. When you understand and when you look at the Bible story of the New Testament, not as history. It's not history at all. It's a story cleverly, brilliantly put together by minds that were being used by preternatural forces, people who were connected to the spirit world, like secret societies and occult orders that know things that you don't know, like George Carlin said. Those kind of people are in a big club and you ain't in it. But once you see how the priests and the higher-ups in religion have given themselves over to spirit demons and spirit powers, and the spirits begin to talk to them and lead them to write scriptures. That's what Hollywood does. They have screenwriters. They have writers that write the script. And that's what we call scribbling. We scribble a script, and then we give it to the actor, and he goes out, and we photograph him you know, saying what we told him to say. And we pay him a lot of money because he's very believable. He's an actor. So today you look at the Bible story of Jesus and you will see that it doesn't make much sense historically. But when you understand it as a metaphor, it really opens up a can of worms. So here are the keys to understanding what I am saying about Jesus. The key is, the bottom line on the New Testament is the oldest story that's ever been told. That's why there are even movies been made about the Bible story of Jesus called The Greatest Story Ever Told. Yes, it's the greatest story ever told because it's the only story. It's the obviously oldest story ever told. So it's the greatest story ever told. What are you talking about? The oldest story. The oldest story in the world is a war on the earth between light and darkness, period. It goes back tens of thousands of years to the ancient and prehistoric times of pre-Adamic man, into the ancient and prehistoric times of the world that we live in. Tens of thousands of years ago, when mankind was not sophisticated, they didn't have new cars and beautiful homes. Mankind was very unsophisticated, like an animal. And so he had to live like an animal. And so he began to appreciate and understand the way the universe and the way our earth works. And so he began to create for himself ideas and to explain the world that he lived in. So the biggest problem has always been when it gets dark, mankind is afraid. That's when evil things happen, is at nighttime, especially tens of thousands of years ago, because at nighttime is when the animal predators come out and they're hungry. And you had better have built yourself a substantial house or a hut or something and stay inside because you are dinner to these animals. And so when the sun would come up in the morning, finally ancient man would know, finally the sun is coming up. Now we can see what's going on outside, and all the animals, the predator animals, they all go back in their holes and their dens, and they hide in there until nighttime comes again. So the bottom line for the ancient mankind was the sun comes up, it's man's world. He can see what he's doing. He has the energy from the sun to grow the flowers and grow plants, and he can feed himself. He can work and see where he's going and what's going on. But when the sun goes down, you better go in and lock the door. The predator animals are coming out again. So there's always been on the earth a war between light and darkness. Even today, there's a war going on today, and the Bible says, in the hearts of men. Some of us are totally in the dark, living our criminal lives. We have no idea in the world what's going on. We're just trying to live like an animal from one day to the next, making as much as you can. And then on the other hand, there are others who are enlightened. They live in the light. They're educated, intelligent. They live good lives. They're good people. They help other people. So there's a war going on the earth between good and evil, between light and darkness. And that's the oldest story of the whole world. And so that's where Christianity begins. It begins with the encoded story that there's a war on the earth between the light and the darkness, between good and evil, between a highly intelligent and incredibly stupid. So if you're walking around in the dark, then when somebody shows you something you've never heard before and explains something to you, you say, oh, it just dawned on me. Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. I see. What do you mean you see? You mean you understand. And why do you, and then you said you understand how. Well, it just dawned on me. Dawn is a word we use when the sun comes up. In other words, somebody who was filled with light or intellectually brilliant was trying to explain something to you, and it finally dawned on you what they're saying. And now you have become enlightened on that subject. So basically, that's what I've tried to do, is try and help people wake up and realize that the world you live in is not what you think it is. It doesn't work the way you think it does. The words don't mean what you think they do, and that English itself is a divine, is a designer language. It was designed purposely during the earliest Middle Ages to put a reference point to the English people so that you can understand certain things. It's a designer language. So we use words that were designed purposely for you to use to deceive you so that you think you understand something when you don't. So that's what I've spent my whole life doing, trying to educate my fellow man.
Right. And a curious thing comes up to my mind as you speak about this. And I wonder if in the last, because we'll take about another 10 minutes before we take a break here. But the reason that I interrupt here is because, you know, you evoke in my mind the idea that it's necessary to see that the evidence for what you're talking about is not something that is just coming out of your mouth. You can see over time that there was an oral tradition at one point telling this very same story. But it was told in different languages, in different places, with different characters' names, before it was ever laid out in what we call the Bible today. Right?
That's correct.
The story of Gilgamesh, the story of Horus, the story of various deities, whether you want to count them as mythology, or you want to count them as religion, or you want to simply objectively study the stories of ancient people, you can see that there is a repetition here. That there is a continuous idea about the sun rising. Who were the original gods? They were the keepers of the sun. They were the children of the sun. They were the sun. Who is the sun? The sun is Jesus, S-O-N, of God, right? But he's also the S-U-N, and people have even pointed to the fact that there is an astrological significance to the story if one understands how the stars come about and are shown to us in the sky, and the representation of the cross, the sacred cross, which pre-existed Christianity, by the way, and that's a whole other story. I mean, another night we'll get into the historical areas here.
Yeah.
But I think that you're, you know, obviously this is not just Jordan's knowledge, but this is what you've come to see as relevant to get people to understand the code here. And there is a code, and that is why when sometimes people hear me speak like this, like you are, in a way, somewhat influenced by you, by the way, but when people hear me speak like this, they often think that I'm being nasty or vengeful or trying to undermine their truth. And then they hear something very strange come out of me, which is that although this is not a historical document, and although there is a great deal of deception in it, and it was deceptively assembled, it does not mean that there is not truth in it. There is truth in it. Just one must decode it.
You're exactly right. There is truth. And that's what I have discovered about the whole New Testament story, is it's incredibly pregnant with profound truth. And it's telling you something right in your face, but you're looking at the whole subject through a different lenses, so you don't see it. I mean, something that's in your face and obvious, but you just don't see it yet. Why? Because you have been born and raised into a culture that has taught you over the years to be in compliance and follow what everyone else is doing, be like everyone else. And then you will have plenty of friends, and they will love you, and you'll have plenty of family and friends, and the whole world will, you know, you will be like the world, and the world will love you because you are like the world is. Unless, of course, you have been picked by the Spirit. And that's what happens. You don't decide anything, but God picks you, so to speak. And so if the Spirit has picked you and causes you to wonder about things and causes you to see things you weren't looking for, and you begin to learn through spiritual experiences that something is going on here, and I'm being led to see something I wasn't seeing before. Now all of a sudden you are beginning to awaken from your lethargic sleep because you were in the dark. And I've given this example before that if you are sound asleep and you are very, very tired and you're sound asleep in your bedroom and someone slips into your bedroom very quietly and comes next to you and turns on a 600-watt bulb next to you, your first and natural human reaction is to jump and turn away from the light. That's only a normal reaction. But then you're going to be very angry that somebody purposely came into your bedroom while you were sleeping. And not to do something nice for you, but to scare you with a 600-watt bulb. And that's not funny. You don't make friends that way. And so, therefore, what they have done is they have made an enemy of you. They've caused themselves to be your enemy, doing something like that in your personal bedroom. And so that's what happens today when you have someone who is very bright and is trying to show you something that and trying to educate you, and he comes into your life and you're sound asleep. You've never looked at anything. You don't know from nothing about much of anything. You just live from one day to the next like everybody else and never knowing, never questioning anything. But somebody comes into your life who's highly educated in the subject and begins just to talk with you about something you've never heard before, and all of a sudden it dawns on you that he's right, what he's saying, and you've never heard it before. And so, therefore, you wake up, you know. Well, yeah, now that you've woken up because there was a bright light, and because, you know, even in humans, if we get somebody who's really very, very bright, we say he's brilliant. Yeah, well, if he's brilliant and he's come into your life and you've been sound asleep in the dark for so long, he's going to look like a 600-watt bulb next to you, and it's not going to be very funny to be awakened and woke up that way. And so now you're going to have to deal with the fact that you're waking up to the fact that you've been asleep all your life.
All right.
Someone who came into your life awoke you up. And now it finally dawned on you, the word for the sun coming up to bring light, it finally dawned on you how much you don't know.
Right. And look, in fairness to those that protest when they are enlightened rather suddenly, I mean, if we just think about the physical reality here, where if you're in a dark room and you are sleeping, your eyes are closed, and someone does suddenly walk in with a very bright light, that can be painful and cause your mood to become rather foul. So, you know, anybody,
you can bet on it,
can have that problem. So this is why I don't get upset when people get angry that I have made them uncomfortable in the darkness that they have become comfortable in.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the attitude that I believe you take as well. And, quite honestly, this is something that needs a bit more encouragement. That when you do find, you know, some of this relative truth that does take a bit of time to get to, I mean, like you said, the human animal, if you will, does not come out of its mother much like a horse or a calf. You know, a cow, any animal almost can suddenly walk within a very short amount of time, can begin to feed itself. Yes, it may still require some of mother's milk, but, you know, instinctively, they instantaneously have a much better chance at taking care of themselves. instantly yeah. and instant and instinctively both. And I'm going to take this break now because I think it's extremely relevant to break it off at this point and allow people to sort of chew on this mentally okay. for a little bit.
yeah.
And why? Because Jordan Maxwell is continuing this series with me on religion, and it is extremely important to get these things together and to put them together in exactly the way that you are. Now, what is also fascinating here is that you talked about the lenses through which people see things. Now, I've just given you the analogy about turning on a light, and that could hurt anybody, give you a headache. Certainly it does, and maybe put you in a bad mood. But here's the other thing to consider, that if you have walked around your entire life with red lenses, see, I wear glasses every day, so glasses are a reality for me. But if my lenses were always red, and I were handed one of the standard Bibles that are printed, a lot of them have all of Jesus' words in red.
Yep.
If I'm walking around with red lenses and I open up those books, you know, it may look as though there is nothing there when something is written in red, not because there is no ink on the page, but because of the lens that I've allowed to be over my eyes for so
Precisely.
Long that yep. I've become accustomed to. And, you know, Jordan, I'll let you finish that thought, but isn't that It kind of goes both ways. You know, there's been a darkness, so therefore there was nothing to observe. You shine some light. But then also there's these lenses, which in my analogy here, you could have red lenses placed on your eyes and therefore not see the red writing, if you will. This is a very simple color scheme, so one could visualize it as they're thinking about what you're saying. But I think both of these things, not only has there been a bit of darkness, but there has been things which have been hidden in plain sight because of the lenses placed over the eyes. Now, what are those lenses? The language and the culture, and it's also very, very necessary to examine the fact that the word cult is in the word culture.
That's right. That's right. And also, if you were in a boat and you fell off the boat and you're drowning, And I get a rope and tie it to a into a lifesaver, and I throw it out at you to grab onto, and it hits you in the head. And now you're yelling at me that I hit you in the head and it hurts. I was trying to save your life. I'm trying to save you. I didn't mean to hit you in the head, but my God, I was trying to do something to save you, because if I don't hit you in the head, you got nothing, and you're drowning. So, you know, sometimes when you're trying to help people to wake up, they don't want to hear it.
Well, that's true. But we have another hour where we're going to hear you, Jordan. And this discussion on religion, this series, continues. And I know I've interrupted a few times here in the first hour, but I do believe that we've gotten out some very interesting material, and it's going to get a little bit deeper in the second hour. Jordan Maxwell is here with me on a Monday. Stay tuned to the
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. The brilliant author of The War State brings you exclusive reports about the big changes upcoming in the markets. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Hey there, it's Sunshine On, and I just wanted to stop by, say thanks to all you amazing listeners who are the Ocelli Effect of Inspiration, for your host Chuck Ocelli to remain free of paid corporate masters with ads that instill fear to sell products they want you to buy. Media's best independent network for guest interviews from the most unique perspectives. And yeah, my perspective's kind of unique, right? So anyway, I just wanted to say thank you so much for tuning in, and let's keep it all on going. You can join in by clicking the donate button. Together, you are the Ocelli Effect.
News, entertainment, and more. You will learn something, children's. Ocelli.com.
Chuck Ocelli.
The second hour begins after that short break there. And Jordan Maxwell is continuing the series with me. This is part two, and this is the second hour of part two. So if you have missed it, I do advise you go back, no matter where you're getting it from. If you're getting it from my feed, okay, it's at Ocelli.com, and you can find part one there already, and you'll find the other parts later on. But also, if you're at YouTube, I'm sure that I put it up there, and I have offered it to anyone who wishes to replay it or use it on their networks. We are putting this out to anyone and everyone who can get their ears around what's happening. So if you have ears to hear, we want to make sure that you're able to, and we thank you for joining us this night. As I said, this is only part two, and where we left off with Jordan was really an interesting place, because this is the place I often get to when I'm asked to discuss this subject, not quite with the amount of time that Jordan has studied the subject, certainly, and partially, in fact, built on some of what I've learned from him over time. But still, this is a unique opportunity, and I'd like to continue on, just basically turn it back over to Jordan and let him continue, because this is exactly the kind of thing that that needs to be heard, needs to be understood, and not in the way that we've understood many other things in the past, but with new lenses on and with new light in the room, if you will. So without any further ado, Jordan, please continue.
Yes. Let's go back to the beginning. The word God, G-O-D, is simply the word dog, spelled backwards. And so when you, and I remember many years ago, a professor saying to me, if you're going to use terms, first of all, define your terms, because maybe what you think a word means is not what other people are understanding the word to mean. And so define for us what you're talking about. So when you talk about God and you worship God, the very word worship goes back to a maritime admiralty banking terminology. And that's a whole series we could get into another time. But everything in our system of government and religion and banking is all based on maritime admiralty, or based on the law of water. And so that's a whole subject, and I kind of wish we could go into that, but it's too big right now. But it's based on water. Why? Because you are a water product. When your mother, when you were born, your mother's water broke. And so you came out of her water. And therefore, anything that comes out of water that's alive is a maritime admiralty product by law. And so everything is based on water. Your money, we say your money goes through your hands like water. No, money is water according to international maritime law. Maritime is talking about the sea. Maritime is the sea. So the law of the sea is the law of water. And the law of money is the law of the law of money is the law of water. So when you say money goes through your hands like water, no, money is water. It's a liquid asset. It's the cash flow. And so why do you have banks? Well, you have banks on both sides of a river. It's called a river bank. And what does a river bank do? It directs the flow of the currency. Because your money is called currency. Why? Because it's a current. It's the ebb and flow of a current. You get money in, the waves come in, then they crash and the waves go out. So you get money coming in and the money goes out. And the money comes in and the money goes out. And that's why, like in money, it's like breathing. You breathe in, you get money in, and then you breathe out and you put money out again. So it's an ebb and flow of water. And so that's why we have everything is in, we always add the word to so many of our words. We always add the word ship, like dealership and friendship and scholarship and courtship and dealership. I mean, think about the hundreds of words that end in ship. Well, there's a word called worship. When you worship God, it comes from a maritime admiralty word, ship, S-H-I-P, worship. Were, it comes from the word worth, W-O-R-T-H, worth. And worth is the value of something. And you may have a different value system than I do. Some things are very important to you, I don't care about. But it's therefore whatever it is that you put a high value on, you put a very big and high worth on, it becomes your worth-ship. And so therefore, you understand worship is nothing more than putting a high value on something. So we call it your worship. If you put a high value on fast cars, then you are worshiping fast cars. And so put a high value on making a lot of money, then we say you're worshiping money. Worth-ship means the worth of a thing. So when you get into the worship of God, is the worth of the idea. What is it worth? And so in the ancient Greek world, God was spelled T-H-E-O-S. Or T-H-E, the is God in Greek. Theos, T-H-E-O-S, or T-H-E. So therefore, the is a word for God, but it can also mean something godly or something very important like God, something superior like God. So if I happen to be working for the United States government, and you happen to be working, and we're talking about our jobs, and you say, well, I work for this man. And I say, I'm working for the man. You work for a man. I work for the man. And if you have a car, you know, and you show me your car, and I got a Rolls Royce, you say, I've got a car. And I say, yeah, well, I have the car. The implies importance, higher in importance. So God is higher in importance in mankind's life. So the whole idea in Greek is, this, if you're talking about God, is T-H-E or T-H-E-O-S. Now, the study of God, if you want to study about God, ology is a word for study, like biology and psychology. Ology is the study. And put the, T-H, in front of it, and becomes theology. Why? It's the study of God. So now you begin to see why we also have something in our world called a theater. People go to theaters all the time, never realizing the word theater comes from a God show. You're going to see a show, and it's in a theater. And so what are you doing when you get, you're going to a theater? Well, this is what a church is. A church is a theater. You go in and you pick a seat wherever you want, wherever you're comfortable, where you can see well, and then, and there's going to be a show. And so you just sit there and are entertained in the church. And unlike the other theaters, you have to pay to get in. But with the church, it's also a theater of events, but they'll pass the hat later and you'll pay for it. But that's the idea. When you go to church, it's a theater. God is T-H-E in Greek. So when you begin to understand the theater is a God show, and I'm reading some of this and I'm trying to remember some of this too. That the Greeks had what they called an open-air theater. In the ancient Greek world, they had open-air theater. And that was where the people would go and watch plays. We go and watch movies and live performances in a theater. Well, that's what the Greeks did. The ancient Greeks would go to an open-air theater, and they would teach the people through their plays about what was moral and what was not, and what was right and what was wrong, and how to live and how not to do and what to not to do. And so the people would learn about God, and they would learn about living with each other, what not to do and how to live. So it was called an open-air theater. And so the idea is that we have a church. Today we go to church. But the word church, so many people in Christianity go to church, but they do not know where the word church comes from. I mean, Christians will tell you all about Jesus Christ, but they have no real understanding of what the word Christ really means and where it came from. They think it is a position. A Christ is a position before God. No, Christ has nothing to do with a position before God. The word Christ goes back to an ancient Greek word for oil. Even today, Crisco has Pillsbury has a Crisco oil. Crisco oil is actually Christo. And Christo becomes in Latin Crisco. And so we have a Crisco oil or Christo or Christo or Christ. Christ means oil. And the connection with Christ and oil is the fact that the kings and queens and all the royalty and all the holy men of the Bible all were called anointed. And even today, the Queen of England or any one of the mentally disordered, inbred goofballs over there that call themselves royalty, when they become king or queen or some high official, we see them as anointed. And they take a big plate with oil and they have a big silver spoon. That's why they were born with a silver spoon. And a silver spoon, they collect up the oil in the spoon and pour it on the head of the queen, and she is now said to be anointed queen. Well, if you look back in the Bible, that's what they did, you know, when different people would be anointed in the Bible. It said that the high priest would pour oil on their head, and then they became anointed. And so the word anointed has to do with sex. It's a sexual term. But happily, most people don't know that. But anyway, we could get into all of those terms and words later. But our word church comes, the very word, as I said, most people going to church have no idea where the word came from. The very word church goes back and can be traced back to a Greek goddess named Circe. C-I-R-C-E. Circe was an ancient Greek goddess of the Middle East and the ancient Greek world. And so when the Pope and the Vatican sent the Crusaders, which was a Masonic order, inside the Catholic Church, they became known as Crusaders. And so they were sent into the Middle East to kick the Islamic peoples out of Jerusalem and give it back to what the Pope felt was his. That was Jesus' home, so it had nothing to do with Islam. So we need to kick the Islamic out and take it over for Christianity. And so when the Knights Templars, the Masonic order, went over into the Middle East and fought with the Islamic peoples and kicked them out. But when they came back, they had learned a lot. You know, the armies had learned a lot living in the Middle East and fighting. They had learned about how the Middle Eastern and the Arabic people fight, all their poisons and their knives, and how they believe what they believe in their religions, what their alcohol, their drinks were like. So the soldiers, they pretty much learned a lot being at war in the Middle East. And when they came back into Europe, they brought a lot of those ideas and belief systems and ideas back with them into Western world. And so they brought back with them the worship of a goddess that they learned about in the Middle East. And that goddess was Circe, C-I-R-C-E. And in the Middle East, Circe, the goddess, was called Mother Circe. And so when the Crusaders came back with this new idea of a goddess called Circe, later on they ended up in Scotland, these Knights Templars. And so in Scotland, the word Circe is Kirk, K-I-R-K, or K-E-R-K, Kirk. And so Kirk is Circe in the ancient language. Circe was a goddess, but Kirk is Circe in Scottish. But and so she became known as Mother Circe in Scotland. But then when the church picked up on Mother Circe in England, now the British or the English people took Circe or Mother Kirk and called it Church, C-H-U-R-C-H. So Mother Church was actually Mother Kirk, which was actually Mother Circe, and Mother Circe was a Greek god who was known as the goddess of occultism, mysticism, magic, drugs, a dark and evil goddess who could trick you into believing things, feed you poisons or feed you narcotics, and trick you into getting you to come into her home. A lot of this you find in the Iliad and Jason and the Argonauts and all that stuff going back into the ancient Greek. But the bottom line is Mother Circe was an evil goddess who dealt with black magic, occultism, drugs, and she would bring you into her home. She would open the doors to her home. And you would see all of these wondrous things with music and candles and all these rituals going on. And then you would enter into her home. And then once you're in there, she would lock the door behind you, shut the doors and lock it. And then she would mysteriously, somehow or another, through the black arts, through occultism, she would take your mind. She would take your mind away from you, and you're under the power of drugs and alcohol and whatever else in her occult religion. And then while you are under the influence of the occultism of Mother Circe in her home, she then could feed on you. She would eat you. She would feed on you, and you became a meal for her. And so that's where we get Mother Circe, Scotland, Mother Kirk, England, Mother Church. And this is what Mother Church has done. She opens up her doors, and with candles and strange rituals and chants and all kinds of strange otherworld presence, it puts people in mind of being very spiritual, very holy. And so they go to church, never realizing church is Mother Kirk and Mother Circe, which is black arts, occultism, and mysticism, and druggery. And so,
well, one interesting thing here, Jordan, and this is a great point at which to bring this up, is to my mind this evokes the idea that a circus is also a circus.
Uh-huh.
You know, the circus.
That's where the word comes from.
With the peanuts and everything else. That's where the word church comes from. But see, now, you think about a circus. First of all, the three-ring circus. Very interesting that there's got to be three rings.
I was going to say that. That was my next comment. It gives us the word circus. Circle,
right.
Or circus.
But what's interesting to me is, as you go forward, though, I want to just enter this because I'm not sure if you're going to go here. Because we didn't script any of this. We didn't plan any of this. But here's what's curious to me is that the circus is one thing, and you're going to go into that. But
yeah.
I also remember a building called the Circus Maximus,
yeah,
which was also the great place. This is all about entertainment, right?
That's
so
right.
Entertainment to what? Get you to suspend your disbelief, get you to engage and become,
yep,
part of the entertainment circle. And I'm wondering, you know, that if people don't understand that the church and the entertainment industry serve the same purpose, because that's the Romans got it from the Greeks, didn't they? When they built the
that's
Circus
exactly
Maximus.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the more modern tradition, although maybe it's not as prevalent as it was a generation or two ago, but still the modern premise exists where there's a circus, right? And
that's
this
right.
is meant to show you a lot of strange and interesting things that you will not see outside of the confines of that tent. Almost miraculous things, exotic animals, and fascinating things that, you know, one could experience through drugs if they take the right ones. But, you know, you could see people flying. We're on very thin ropes and things like that, and doing things that most people are not capable of even doing. You know, very specialized behaviors, the trapeze, and all of these things. It seems interesting to me that all of it kind of starts to make a lot more sense
when
you understand this route. So please continue, but I wanted to just tell you what you were provoking in my mind as I was listening to you.
Well, so Circe, C-I-R-C-E, Mother Circe, gives us a word also, circle and circus. And that's why you have a three-ring circus, circles. So you have a three-ring circus. Yeah, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. Osiris, Isis, Horus. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. All the religions have a triune God. It's a three-ring circus. It goes back to Circe. It's a religion. And people buy into all of these religions and never realizing it comes from an ancient source that you have no idea about. And then you bought into it, never actually doing any research to find out where the ideas have come from. And so I have said that if you are going to you're going to send a package, a big box in the mail. You go into the garage and you get some rope and you tie up the box with the rope and that will probably be all right. That'll probably do for what you need. But if you're going to go into the garage and take that rope and go up on the end of a 10-story building and tie it off and hang on that rope off the 10-story building, then you better go back and look at the integrity of that rope before you go hanging your life on it. It may be all right for a box you're mailing, but it may not be all right to hang your body on it, because your life depends on the integrity of that rope. So the same thing is true in what you believe. You think you believe something, but until you've actually educated yourself and gone back into the history of what it is you are involved in and what you have joined or been born and raised into, and you begin to see where this stuff has really come from, not what you thought it was. That's why I say all the time, the world is not what you think it is, and nothing works the way you think it does, and I mean nothing. The police are not here to do what you think they do. Education and college and the universities don't do what you think they're doing. And government is not here to do what you think they're doing. There's a whole different world out there. As George Carlin says, it's a big club that you ain't in it. And so you need to back off and take stock of what you are doing and what you believe and where you think you're going, and then you'll find out you've been lied to from day one. And your entire life you've been praying to God and hoping and praying, never realizing for a moment you're just praying to an ancient god of Rome. You're praying to some ancient Greek god, some ancient Babylonian, Sumerian, Phoenician, Canaanite god that's been dressed up, repainted, and sold to you as something very holy and righteous, and you never realize for a moment that you've been had. And so I'm trying to wake people up to find out where their ideas and their religions have actually come from. And this is what I, you know, we could talk for hours about this subject, but there's a whole encoded story in Christianity that I think is very interesting, because it really tells you the real story once you see it.
Right. Now, so, as you're going through this, Jordan, I want to let you know that you've actually simultaneously provoked similar questions from live listeners, which I'm going to tie together for you here and ask together. So this is for three of you who asked this question almost exactly at the same moment, in apparently, which is, you know, about the Vatican, by the way. And it is... do you believe that the Vatican rules the world as it stands, or has it simply been one of the main architects of the control system which has been put into place, therefore it actually serves something else? So the two questions together are, you know, does the Vatican rule the world, or has it simply been the mechanism by which the architecture was created for the control mechanism of religion in general?
And I think the answer to that, according to my understanding, and I'm not the world's foremost authority, but I've been looking at it for almost 60 years, I would say number two is what I would say. It's not running the whole world, but in point of fact, it does say it owns the world, and all of the leaders around the world, from China and Russia and Africa and any other countries on the earth, they all must go to Rome sometime in their political career and kneel down before the Holy Father, and he represents God, so he's a Godfather. Get it? And this is why the Italian mob and the Sicilian and Italian mafiosi all come from Italy, Sicily, Corsica, all of the international criminal organizations, and they, you know, and so the Pope is actually, you know, he's connected to God and he's a Holy Father, so he's a Godfather. And so I think that the Pope and the Vatican is actually is in the ultimate position for world control and world domination. But I also agree with the second part, is that it merely represents something even far more sinister. It represents another power even higher that uses the Vatican to dominate the earth, because all of our laws, all of our British laws, British maritime laws, our British corporate laws, our American laws, all the laws that we live by, and all the institutions of government, FBI, CIA, especially CIA and NSA, those are all Catholic organizations.
Point of fact, really quickly, the Pope at one point declared, and I don't remember which Pope it was, but I do remember reading a papal decree, I guess they call it a papal bull at one point, that stated that effectively the souls of all the men on the earth are effectively the property, the responsibility of the Catholic Church, which is the Vatican. I mean,
that's right.
You know, I don't remember exactly which one it was, but I do believe if one were to search it out, they could find the papal decree that says precisely this. Jordan, am I right or wrong?
That's exactly correct. And that's why the kings in Europe and all the big shots that run the world, the kings especially, will tell you that they have a divine right of kings, a divine right. And so divine right implies that God anointed you. God put you there. When did we ever see God put any of the British, you know, who have divine right of kingship? No, what they're talking about when they say divine right means that they have been anointed and agreed upon by the Pope. When the Pope decides that he likes you and that he can use you because of your special activities, he will anoint you to be the King of England. And now you, as the king, can crawl on your knees and go before the Pope and bow before the Pope and kiss his ring. And every time I see people, politicians from all over the world, just go on the web and type in kissing the Pope's ring and see how many hundreds and hundreds of political leaders and mafiosis and gangsters and international Illuminatis and all kinds of dark, demonic people, all on their knees before the Pope, kissing his ring. And so it puts me in mind of Godfather 1, when you see the old man going in to visit the Godfather, and he's standing there, and he's bending down to kiss the Godfather's ring. That's exactly what they do in Rome. If you're a politician, you go before the Holy Father, who represents God. He's the Godfather, and you better bend down and kiss his ring. And so that's the name of the tune. So I say that the Vatican is the home office of international Illuminati criminality on the earth. We know the Vatican and the Pope has been involved. Popes all through the history of the church have been involved in drug running, white slavery, prostitution. Even if you go back to the history books, the encyclopedias, it will tell you that the whole idea of the nuns, where you were bringing women into the church, nuns were always originally the nuns of the Catholic Church. Back in the Middle Ages, were the private prostitutes of the hierarchy in the church. The hierarchy of the church, the Pope and the cardinals, they would keep their own women. And so they were called nuns. And so the nunneries were actually prostitution houses for the clergy of the Roman Catholic Church. And this is why today the nuns, as a matter of fact, the word nun in the Hebrew is a fish, because Jesus was a great fisherman. So a nun is a fish. And the more you begin to see that, the whole idea of nuns, they wear black robes, they wear black dresses, black. Why? Because the Catholic priest wears black robes. And why? Because Darth Vader wears a black robe. Dracula wears a black robe. Everything is done in black robes. Why? Because the planet Saturn, that beautiful planet with the rings, is, we call it Saturn. Saturn was the god of the black robe. So when you see people like rabbis, Catholic priests, nuns wearing black robes, when kids graduate from high school or university, they wear a black robe. They wear on their head a square marker board. It all connects to the planet Saturn. Mm. And Saturn is connected to the concept of Satan, Saturn.
Mm. As do the judges' robes. As do the judges' robes. My specific reference, just so because I was asked about this really quickly, is Unum Sanctum, which was by Pope Boniface, I guess it's pronounced, B-O-N-I-F-A-C-E, the 8th. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was in 1302, if you want to look that up. And so I just wanted to let people know that this is not something that I'm imagining and Jordan is agreeing to, that this is part of the publicly known declarations. And, you can find it through Catholic websites if you like. You can look through their own doctrine to see this. This is literally described in English as one God, one faith, one spiritual authority. Literally issued by the church, the Pope, as their head. So I just want to make that very clear. Yep. And again, the robes, the black robes. See, again, the courts, you got black robes.
Well, exactly. I was going to say, when you go into court, the judge wears a black robe. And therefore, when if you're a Catholic and you're in church, you're sitting there waiting for the service to begin. And when the priest walks out in the black robe, everyone rises. And you don't have to be told. It's just that you rise when you see the priest come in. That's the way it works in the Catholic Church. You rise. And so that's the same thing you do when the judge walks into the courtroom. Everyone rise. Why? Because the judge is wearing a black robe, which represents the planet Saturn. Saturn was the god of the black robe. And when you begin to see the connection between Saturn and Dagon, in the Catholic Church today, the Pope represents not Jesus. He does not represent Jesus. He represents an ancient God that you know nothing about. The Catholic Church, when you see the Pope, he represents the worship of Dagon. It's spelled D-A-G-O-N, Dagon. Dagon is an ancient Phoenician Canaanite god of the sea. And he comes out of the ocean and taught men how to live, taught men all the holy scriptures. He taught men all about God, etc. And then he would turn around and go back into the sea. And so he was referred to as Dagon, the sea god, or the god from the sea. And that's why today he was referred to as the fish god, the fish man. And Jesus was the great fisherman. And so that's why the Pope wears what we call the Pope's mitre, that strange tall hat that he wears is a fish head. It's called the Pope's mitre, but it's actually the head of Dagon. Again, it's spelled D-O-G-A-N, D-A-G-O-N, D-A-G-O-N, Dagon. Dagon is a fish god of the Babylonians and Sumerians and the Phoenician Canaanites. And so the Pope is wearing the fish head of Dagon, the fish god, but he also wears the Jewish yarmulke. And that's an interesting connection there that most people don't know anything about. Why does the Pope wear the little yarmulke that the Jews wear? And why do the cardinals wear the little yarmulke like the Jews wear? My God, there's a whole story here connecting the Roman Empire with the Jewish people and the Jewish religion with the Romans. And there's another connection that most people are going to think I'm totally crazy on this one. Unless you actually do what I do and go to a library and start studying the subject, and then you'll see what I'm talking about. There's a big connection that's always been there, but nobody realized it. I finally found it after 60 years of looking at it. It finally occurred to me, because I've been looking at these symbols all my life, but it finally occurred to me that of what I was looking at after doing it for so many years. There is a big connection between the German people, Germany, and the people we call Germans, and what we call Jewish. Jewish and German are connected in an occult way that you don't know anything about. You probably never heard anything about it. But the Pope is wearing the yarmulke of the Jew. He represents the Roman Empire, and today the Holy Roman Empire was referred to as Germany. Germany was referred to as the Holy Roman Empire. And then when you see the connections between Judaism, worshiper of the sun god, the Jews were worshippers of the sun god, that was these are all things I wanted to get into next week. But the Jews were worshippers of the sun god of Egypt. Well, so were the Germans. They were very interested in the sun gods of Egypt. And so the name of the Hebrew god, the god of the Jews, is called Yahweh. And they say that that name is so holy that they can't use that name in normal speech. But they have given you an abbreviation, which they say is better. Just if you want to talk about the Almighty, absolute Almighty God of the Hebrews, their God's chosen people, and if you want to talk about their God, the absolute sovereign God of the universe, you can't use his name. He's so holy. But they give you four letters. And so in every synagogue, and that's the word is every synagogue on the earth, in any country you go to, you will always see on the altar and in the synagogue, you will see a round sunburst. It's always a symbol of the sun. Every synagogue on the earth, period. They have the round sun symbol, which is the sun symbol for the sun god of Egypt. But within the sun, on all synagogues, you will see the four letters for the name of God so that you don't have to pronounce God's name. You can use the four letters. And so there's the four Hebrew letters that is called the Tetragrammaton. Tetragrammaton. And so most people know what Tetragrammaton means. It's the four letters for the Hebrew God, which is an abbreviation. Well, look at the word Tetragrammaton. It's tetra, which is four, gramma, which is a letter, like A, B, C, D, tetra, four, letter as gramma, and aton, A-T-O-N, tetragramma aton. Aton was the Egyptian sun god, and he rolled across heaven, and the ancient Egyptian mysteries religion, they talk about the Aton. Well, the Aton in Germany was symbolized by the swastika. The swastika is, everybody pretty well knows, the sun is a sun symbol. The swastika is the sun as it rolls across sky, as it rolls across the sky. And so the swastika represents the Aton. Well, so does the, it's a sun symbol. Well, of course, in the synagogues, you have, the Jewish God, and he's inside the sun symbol, and it's called the Tetragrammaton. And then you say, well, wait a minute, what's the connection between the Jewish God and the swastika? Well, if you go to Israel, there are synagogues that have on the floor of these synagogues. I didn't do it. I'm just telling you. If you go to Israel, there are synagogues which have on the floor, as you walk in, big, huge swastikas. And so you ask the question, what are the Jews doing with putting swastikas on the floor of their synagogues? Well, we're not supposed to answer that. Besides, we're not even supposed to see it. It's not important. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. But once you understand, wait a minute, there's something going on between the Jewish religion, the Nazi party, the German people, and today Israel. And then when you go back and look at the history of where the ancient peoples came from and what their worship of the sun was, oh my God, we could go on for hours about this, but there, I'm just bottom line telling you that there is a connection between Judaism, Nazism, the swastika, and the Tetragrammaton, all being the sun god of ancient Egypt. And this is a far bigger story than you even begin to suspect.
Well, what's amazing to me, Jordan, about that is that you're talking about Yahweh, you're talking about the sun god, you're talking about, but you know what's fascinating is that I am rather confused as I objectively attempt to read what they call their scripture, because I see mentions and references that look to me like Baal worship or Baal worship, B-A-A-L. I see Azeroth represented in their scriptures. I see other gods represented in what they are calling their scriptures. I brought up two, you brought up one, or two just now. It seems to me as though there is a composite of many.
Judaism itself has seven parts to Judaism, seven different parts to Judaism. And there's seven different religions made into one during the Middle Ages. They took seven different ancient religions and wove them together and put them together and called it today Judaism. But most Jews are not aware of that. And most people in the world are not aware that Judaism is nothing more than an amalgamation of seven different ancient prehistoric and ancient religions that have been molded into one. And so that's a whole story in itself. One of the ancient religions is the worship of the moon. That's one of the oldest religions connected to Judaism, is the worship of the moon god. The moon god in the ancient world in the ancient Arabic world, ancient Egypt, there was a moon god. And today, that moon god is still part of what we call the Judaism today. And that moon god was called, if you look it up in the dictionary, Encyclopedia of Religion, you will find that the moon god of the ancient Arabic world was called Sin, S-I-N. Not that you've done something bad and you committed a sin. No, that was the name of the moon god. S-I-N, look it up in the dictionary. Sin, and it will tell you, was an ancient Arabic moon god. Today, Sin is referred to as Allah, the moon god. But originally, the moon god in Arabia was called Sin. And so this is why today the Jews go to synagogue, because the synagogue is the house of worship of the god Sin, the moon god. And so we know that the Jews today have a lunar calendar based on the moon. And so, you know, we say that there's tribes of Israel. Well, the Native American tribes also count their days from the many moons, not suns, but many moons.
Well, right. And the thing is that what's interesting here about tonight's presentation is that this is the foundation upon which we are told Christianity is built, right? That is the Old Testament. This is the New Testament. And it's only because this happened after this that we have, you know, this point of reference. And I think that in understanding what has actually happened in the development of Christianity, you must take a look at the alleged foundation for it. And that is the Old Testament. That is the Torah. That is, right? So
yeah, but I've been saying that for, you know, for years, and all I'm getting is just people looking like a deer in the headlights. I'm trying to explain to you, nothing just popped in out of nowhere. Everything has a history. And so go back and look at the history of the Jewish religion. And I can, you know, I can tell you some stuff about the Jewish religion that will shock you. But I am totally sure, this is my idea, but I've been doing this for many years. I'm totally sure, beyond the shadow of a doubt for myself, I've got all the proof I need. And I can present it to you in the next time we do 2 hours, all the proof to show that there was, in actual fact, historically, no ancient Judaism, period. There was no ancient Israel, never existed. Period. End of sentence. It never, ever existed. There was no Abraham. And all three major religions say that they are Abrahamic religions. Well, if they're all Abrahamic religions, they're all killing each other. So that should tell you something about Abraham. All three religions are murdering each other. World wars are being fought between the three major religions that claim Abraham. And then we find out there was no Abraham. Abraham never existed. Abraham and Judaism and the whole of Judaism and the worship of Abraham goes back to Hindu. Christianity, Judaism, and Islam are Hindu religions. And there's a lot of the ancient Egyptian thrown in there. But basically, Christianity and Judaism are a Hindu religion. The Hindus had it first, and they still have it today. And so in India, the highest-ranking priests are called Brahmins because their god, the ultimate god of the Hindu, is called Brahman. And so you have Brahmins, and then the Brahmin priesthood will tell you that they are a chosen priesthood, that they are referred to as God's chosen people, and they are a Brahmin. And so you put an A in front of it, it becomes Abrahmin. An Abrahmin, because originally Abraham was not called Abraham, he was called Abram. Abram became Abraham. Well, Abram is A-B-R-A-M, Abram, Abram. Father is Ab, A-B is father, and Ram was the ram god. of Egypt. The ram god, represented the constellation of Aries. Aries, the ram. So the worship of Aries, the ram, was Abram, A-B-R-A-M, Abram, or Father Ram. And so in India, you have Abram or Abraham. No, it's not Abraham. It's Brahman with an A, Abraman. And there was a goddess that was directly connected to the Brahman religion. Her name was Saraswati. And so you have Abram and Sarah, Abram and Sarah, or Abraham and Sarah. No, it's Abram and Saraswati. It's Hindu. It goes back into an ancient, dark religious history thousands of years ago. But today, we don't care about that. That's all a bunch of nonsense. We don't care about that. We are the followers of Abraham. That's why we kill and rape and have pornography and child sacrifice. and then we see what's going on in the Catholic Church with the pornography and the boy stuff. And then we find out that it's okay for a 40-year-old or 50-year-old man to marry a little 8-year-old girl. And they have child marriages all over the Middle East. And then you find out in the Torah or in the Talmud, especially in the Talmud, there's all kinds of stuff about sexual connection between men, grown men, and 4, 5, and 6-year-old girls, etc. And it's just complete with that. There's a lot of stuff out there talking about how if a man has sex with an 8-year-old or 5-year-old, it is not considered immorality at all. It's only natural and normal, and nobody gets hurt. And right. So then you find out the same thing is believed about the altar boys. And why are they called altar boys? Because they're putting the boy on the altar, just like Abraham put his son on the altar to kill him.
Right.
I'm just telling you that there's a world of knowledge that's been hidden, and the word hidden in Latin is occult. Occult means hidden. So there's a world of occult knowledge about religion, government, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. The whole world is lying in the power of a dark, sinister, and evil force that's been around for tens of thousands of years. And mankind is still crawling on his knees, kissing the ring of the Pope and kissing the ring of the Godfather, and people are killing each other because of their belief systems, and nobody seems to know what's going on.
Well, and that's
what
the
world we live in.
And that's the saddest part of it, is that they don't recognize what the foundation is built upon. Today, the ram's horn is still blown, to signify certain
the shofar.
Things.
Shofar is blowing the ram's horn.
And, this is just some of the resonant evidence of some of what's gone on here. Aries is the god of war, depending on where it is you read about him.
And then what about the Jews worshiping the golden calf? Golden calf is actually Taurus, the bull, the constellation of Taurus, the bull. And the Taurus, the bull, represents the sun in the sky in the age of Taurus. And so the Taurus is the sun in the age of Taurus, and so it becomes the golden is the sun, golden calf. The calf is Taurus, the bull. And so what's the next constellation after Taurus, the bull, if it isn't Aries, the ram? So the Jews were worshiping the golden calf. Well, now today they're worshiping Aries, the ram. So they're blowing the ram's horn. And
right.
Then after Aries, the ram, what comes next? Pisces. Pisces is the two fish. And so that's interesting, too, is the two fish. Well, the Israel, about 5 years ago, had a big news story that said that they found the oldest church ever built in the world today. The oldest Christian church ever built was found in Israel in an area called Megiddo. Megiddo has today the oldest church ever found, Christian church, and it's in Megiddo, Israel. And what did they find on the floor of this oldest church that Israel and everybody agreed, America and England, everybody agreed, is the oldest church ever done. First one ever done. And what is in the middle of the floor but the two fish of Pisces? And now we're getting ready to go into the new age of Aquarius. I'm telling you, nobody seems to have figured out how this dark system of world government, world religion, banking, international monetary systems, the industrial military complex. My God, there's a world of knowledge. People just don't know.
Well, that's right.
I've got on my website. My website is Jordan Maxwell's Show. If you go on my website, you need to put in the word show, S-H-O-W, Jordan Maxwell Show. And on there, you will see an advertisement for my research, Jordan Maxwell's Research Society. What that is another website I have dedicated to putting all of my research on this second website. It's huge, and it's going to get bigger. I've got thousands of more articles coming on to. I have on my research society audio, videos, places to go for documents, books, ebooks, free documents. Just an incredible array of like 15 or 16 different divisions of research on my Jordan Maxwell Research Society, which is cram-packed with all kinds of documents and pictures proving everything I'm telling you. It's all there. So just go on Jordan Maxwell's Show and make sure you add the word show.
That's right, JordanMaxwellShow.com. That is the only website that Jordan Maxwell himself is responsible for and is part of. That's the truth. So let's keep that very clear. JordanMaxwellShow.com. It will be included along with some other references from tonight's discussion. We are out of time on this, but I do say that it is something that needs to be examined if you're going to base your entire life on a religious system of faith, and people are going to debate whether all things should be based on this religious system of faith, then I think it is required of the individuals that say that this is their way of being, that they examine the foundations of it. And Jordan has certainly done that over the past 2 hours and shown us some things, some of them in plain sight, some of them hidden, coded in the language, some of them, I'm not sure how to come about explaining where they are, but they are there. And there are many levels, and of course, this is only the beginning. So, yes, JordanMaxwellShow.com, all together, those three things, JordanMaxwellShow.com. And the Research Society, to click through and join that, you're going to have access to a tremendous amount of material which is there. And as we discussed last time, a tremendous amount of material is still being added, very carefully curated and created, especially so that Jordan can share all of the knowledge that he has acquired, as well as the knowledge that he can point you to, the references, many, many bits of information there, terabytes of information that are there, available for you to go ahead and join the Research Society, but also, you know, just begin by going to JordanMaxwellShow.com. Jordan, like I said, we're out of time tonight, but we will continue this next Monday. And one of these times very soon, we're going to get into a historical discussion here. We're going to get into the rest of the code related to Judaism and the historical evidence thereof. And meanwhile, we haven't even left the confines of the, quote, Abrahamic religions. Right? There's still much more, Jordan.
And wait till you hear the story about Moses. Boy, what a story that's going to be about Moses. It's a story you've never heard.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to it because I have some ideas about that, and I think people need to know what it is that, you know, they were representing in that movie. Remember the Ten Commandments, Jordan?
That's right. Yeah, we'll talk about that. I'll talk about that next time if you want to. Boy, there's a story behind the Ten Commandments that's going to knock you out.
Exactly, and I can't wait to get into it. But unfortunately, like I said, this is the end of part two, and we will continue until Jordan is done. Basically, we're not sure how many parts this will be, but this is a multi-episodic series devoted to, well, really decoding religion in general. And, you know, we're not going to just stay to the areas we've been in. I do believe Jordan has a lot more to say here. And, well, this may take a little while, but it will be well worth it for you, the listener. So, once again, JordanMaxwellShow.com is Jordan's website. I do appreciate all of you for staying tuned in and listening to this discussion, because I believe it is extremely valuable to understand, to decode the world around you so you can understand what it is you are participating in. Jordan, thank you so much for doing this with us.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Anyway, no matter who you are, where you are, remember this. You are the effect. I am merely Ocelli. Have a good night, guys.